Television has been a part of Irish life for nearly 70 years now. A new book by Edward Brennan reconsiders the role of television in social change. An important aspect of this work is people's memories of television when they were growing up. I'll be talking to the author in a moment. But first, let's hear some of those memories. Our producer, Lorcan Clancy, went to Lanesborough, County Longford, and asked people what they remember about the arrival of this new medium.
My first memory of a television, we didn't understand anything about television, was in a bicycle and radio shop in the 50s. I would have been a teenager. But he had this thing in a corner. You could hear just a very, very faint sound. No picture, just fog.
I think every neighbour around the place had a television before we had. Of course, we used to be rambling into different houses at different stages and the telly would be turned on.
We didn't get one at home until we were 14, but we used to go up to our neighbours, the Finnegans, and we used to watch it there. And on a Saturday, we'd be watching The Virginian. It was a great Western, black and white, of course.
The programme I remember most as a child was Wanderley Wagon, which was on RTE back in the late 60s when I was a child.
Maybe around 1965, I bought a second-hand television, which, must say, ran for several years. This was at a time when the throwaway society hadn't arrived. And so when you got something, you held on to it, and if it broke down, you got it repaired and could get it repaired.
Lorcan, I was a nurse, and in those days, we did not have time to watch television. I don't even believe that there was a television in the nurse's home where I lived. That is 50 years ago.
People used to be able to get BBC a bit, but it had the snow effect. But it didn't deter people from watching programmes on it because it was always exciting to see this newfangled thing called television, you know.
If there was a kiss or something on the television between two of the actors in whatever show we were watching, and we'd all start giggling and laughing, and then we'd want to practice on one another. It was the nearest we got to a blue movie in them days.
I think it was only turned on in the evening time, maybe. As people thought that it was going to use up an awful lot of electricity and stuff like that, you know. They were half afraid of it, most of them.
And was there still only one channel in those days?
Yes, only the one, yeah. But we're so lucky to have the one. We were delighted. We were made up.
And there were some memories of television in the 1950s and 60s. With me here in studio is Edward Brennan, lecturer at TU Dublin and the author of the book A Post-Nationalist History of Television in Ireland. You're very welcome.
Thanks,
Eddie,
very much.
We just heard a sample of memories there. Tell us why talking to people about their experiences of television growing up was such an important part of your research.
It was important because when I've been teaching media history for a number of years in DIT, now TU Dublin, and it struck me as I was teaching that there was quite a mainstreaming sort of effect in the histories that were there. They were sort of putting forward the same narrative more or less all the time. And when I looked at it, there is a sort of a dominant narrative in the history of television in Ireland, which we might get a chance to talk about shortly. But I guess the key thing is that they're based in institutional sources. So when you base your histories in institutional sources, you get quite a limited picture of what's going on. And you get to, I suppose, the title of the book, A Post-Nationalist History, you get an essentially nation-state-shaped picture of what's going on with television. So when you talk to people then, you get far more diversity, as you can hear from the Vox Pop. People have very, very different memories of what television was about. But you also get diversity in the sense that you see that people in different areas had different experiences of television. There wasn't a homogeneous national audience. Women had different experiences to men, so on and so forth. And the other thing you saw is that the history of television in Ireland was very much about imported programmes, about British broadcasts and so on. So you very much get a history of the medium as opposed to history of RTE, for example, which is what most histories written in Ireland so far I've looked at.
Just go back to pre-RTE and, I'm old enough to remember days before RTE television, not that many of them, but would the history of television in Ireland be very different in the part of the country where I came from, which was very, very near the border, and if you were living in Kenmare, for example?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the things is that the the rollout, even the rollout of RTE was very slow across the country. So people in parts of Kerry and so on were still getting reliable coverage in the 70s and 80s. So there was that difference. The other thing is that Meath and so on would have been within range of the Divis transmitter, which started up in 1955. You would have had UTV that came online in 1959. So in Meath, you would have had pretty reliable television coverage from the mid-50s onwards. So a very different experience of television again to people living in Cork or Kerry, for example.
It was also, one gets the impression from that Vox Pop, from those people in Lanesborough, that it was more of a social thing, that if you didn't have a television, you weren't necessarily completely disadvantaged.
You could go next door. Well, you could be disadvantaged, because one of the things was that there was a lot of collective viewing. So as people put it, if you had a television, you wouldn't be allowed to keep it to yourself, that the neighbours would be in and they'd be watching it and so on. And you get lots of stories about people going to their uncle's houses, friends' houses, or a pub, as the case may be, and so on. And so people very much practiced collective viewing and so on. And then on the other hand, people could be at a loss because the neighbours would invite themselves in. And as one woman said, someone from a working class background living in the centre of Dublin said that the neighbours would simply invite themselves in. This was in the 1950s. They'd invite themselves in and you couldn't really turn them away. And so they had to be entertained. There had to be
hospitality, biscuits, and then you'd have to give them a cup of tea, sandwiches,
And so on. And so as this woman put it, her husband would be going without meat in his sandwiches that week because they had to entertain the neighbours.
And did it also change the use of space, the shape of houses, the use, well, not so much the shape of houses, but certainly the use of spaces in houses?
Yeah, I mean, there's a very interesting statement from Mrs. Frances Condell, who was the mayor of Limerick in 1962. She talks about how corporations would need to reconsider the design of houses because we had to face up to the fact that every modern family would now watch television. In Levittown, the famous American mass-produced suburb, they installed the television as standard from 1950. So there was this sense that the television was constructed within media and so on, has been very much the heart of family activity, very much the heart of the modern home. And so that was put across through media. But then in practice as well, people changed the way they use their houses. They changed the way they use the home. So the whole idea of the good room was quite common for a lot of people. And the television then got in the way of keeping a room empty. And so sometimes people gave up the good room and turned the good room into a dining room, or they merged the dining room with the sitting room or whatever the case may be. One of the interesting things that happened was in speaking to people, there seemed to be something of a taboo in the 50s and 60s about mixing food with watching television. It was seen by some people to be very bad form, to be quite poor manners to eat in front of the television set. So people might have a dining room, which they would then reconfigure in order to watch television later in the evening, but they wouldn't eat in front of the set. And so one of the things that seems to happen then over time is that space in the home becomes casualised, that people, a lot of people in the 50s seem to have quite clear functions for different rooms. But then over time, people would bring the odd snack in front of the television. One day in the week, they might have their tea in front of the television. And then over time, there's televisions in kitchens, televisions in bedrooms, and so on. And so the use of space.
And does the good room disappear?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, how many? The good room now is quite a rare
Occurrence.
And of course, there's a class element too. So some people could keep a good room and a sitting room for reading in and have a dedicated television room, where I spoke to people like there might be more than 10 people living in a flat in the middle of Dublin, and they sat where they could and at their dinner in front of the screen and so on.
And did it kill conversation or did it spark conversation, even if the conversation was only about, how bad was the bad guy in the Virginian?
I think it did both. I mean, it did both. That one of the things that came across, and you have to bear in mind there may be an element of nostalgia attached to this, but people talked about neighbouring and so on, and how after that era of television being a new thing and calling down to the uncle or the neighbour or whatever to see the television, once everybody had their own television, there was a sense that people didn't need each other as much, particularly country people, that, you wouldn't walk the half mile to the neighbour because maybe they didn't want to see you when you got there. They were more interested in the screen and so on. On the other hand, then, so there was that there was less neighbouring, but then television became a form of social capital. It became the stuff of conversation, and it became something you had to be up to speed with. So people talking about things like The Fugitive, you couldn't go to work, and particularly people talking about going to school, you couldn't be on the school bus and not have seen The Fugitive, because you had to be up to speed with what was going on that week and so on. So television became, I suppose, part of what people talk about now is the, the water cooler conversation. Yeah. Became part of what was going on.
But was there as much conversation about The Fugitive as there was about what was being discussed on The Late Late Show, for example?
There was at one stage a crossover where the key detective from The Fugitive appeared on The Late Late Show. I think you're talking about two very different types of things, but I mean, like The Fugitive, the final episode of The Fugitive in 1967 was absolutely central to people's conversations. People talked about how the streets were empty and so on. They were struck by the power of television. I think part of what was going on there as well is that Ireland had always been behind the times when it came to popular culture, particularly popular culture coming from America. So quite often, Westerns and so on that we were watching were already cancelled in America. They were 2 or 3 years old. The final episode of The Fugitive appeared on RTÉ a day after it had appeared.
Don't give away the ending.
A day after it had appeared in America and a day before UTV had it. So that was massive. But then the type of conversations facilitated by things like The Late Late Show and television drama and so on had perhaps a far deeper significance in terms of media history in Ireland.
Thank you very much indeed for joining us. And the book is called A Post-Nationalist History of Television in Ireland, published by Palgrave. If you want to pick up the book at a much reduced price of £9.99, you can do so only this Friday, 6th of March, on the Palgrave website, where they'll be running a deal of the day promotion.